This is The Fantasy Show with Shoali and Matt Marchese on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Sunday morning, and you know what that means. It's time for The Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Shoali, Matt Marchese, here for a good time, not a long time, this Sunday morning. We're here for just an hour. This football talk will be preempted by football talk with Canada taking on Croatia later on this morning. But fear not, in place of our usual 2 hours of start-sit talk, we're still here to take your questions on the People's Text Line at 590-590. Name and location, please. And you can tweet at us as well at SNS Ali with two L's, at MattyMar89, at The Fantasy Show on Twitter. We'll go through some, if not start sits for this hour, we'll go through some of the top stories of the weekend, take a look back at the Thanksgiving games in America as well. Some pretty dry turkey being served after all of those games, especially on the Patriots-Vikings game. Boy, Adam Thielen did not like that at Thanksgiving turkey. But we'll get to all that stuff a little bit straight ahead as well. Again, your texts at 590-590. But I suppose, Matt, if people do want to text us on the text line with football questions, not football questions, then I guess you can answer those. I don't think you'll need my help.
Yeah, I might be able to take the reins on that one. Yeah. What an interesting World Cup it's been. And I apologize to everyone for my voice because I'm fighting one right now. Air circulation is not great. So I'm fighting one this morning, so I apologize. But yes, really looking forward to all the football games today. And of course, Canada playing Croatia, which should be a really fun matchup.
I hope that someone scores a goal today for Team Canada. I think that's where I'm at now. I just want a goal, one goal, but before the end of the group stage. And you know what? It's already a success, but that's what I'll take that, and I will leave the tournament a happy man. I was also a very happy man, Matt, after the Thursday night games, or I guess not just Thursday night, but after all of the Thursday games on American Thanksgiving this past couple of days, and it was Bills Lions, Giants, Cowboys, and Patriots, Vikings, and your Buffalo Bills gutting out a very narrow win, eking out a narrow win over the Detroit Lions, who are 4-7. The Buffalo Bills get their 8th win of the season. They look, I'm not sure if they looked super inspiring to me, but I will say, and I've said this before, you know, you kind of trust the process a little bit when it comes to starting your own fantasy players, especially when it comes to the age-old adage of starting your studs, right? When it comes to start your studs, for us, for our purposes, what that means essentially, like, let's take Stephon Diggs, right? Before he caught that touchdown at the end of the game, I want to say he had like 4 catches for 30 yards or something like that. And I feel like if you start your studs and they lay down a stinker, then, I mean, you know, ultimately speaking, you're not going to feel too bad about starting like Stephon Diggs, who through for much of the season has been the WR1. So I don't think you're going to feel too bad for sure. But at the same time, it's always tough for your best players to see a relatively low score hanging there from Thursday all the way to all the games starting later on Sunday afternoon. So I was very pleased as someone who has a couple of shares of Stephon Diggs across a couple of leagues. I was very pleased to see that not only did he catch a late touchdown, but he also caught an absolute rope from Josh Allen to set up the game-winning field goal at the very end of regulation. So I guess all's well that ends well for Diggs, less so for Gabe Davis. I think in half PPR, Davis ended with around like 5.5 points or so. But Josh Allen, I actually can't believe people were – I saw people complaining about the performance of Josh Allen on Thursday given the slow second half, and he still ended with about 30 points.
Yeah, it's going to be the story for the rest of the year, honestly. I don't know what to make of this team. Like, if I'm being frank here, which I will be, they didn't deserve to win that game. They didn't move the ball as well as we thought they would. I think that Detroit is better than what they have been throughout the season. I think that Detroit has vastly improved from, you know, the team that was giving up 30-plus points every week. But in the same breath, I also kind of get it because it's like, oh, they're playing Detroit. Josh Allen should have, you know, over 300 passing yards. He should have 4 touchdown passes. He should also run one in, and he should probably have like a 50 burger week. But that's not that. Firstly, that's not how the offense has rolled the last few weeks, especially since the elbow injury. And that's just Detroit is just a better football team than they were at the beginning of the year defensively. And they still managed to put up 25 points. The other thing is, Joe, is that the Bills, their defense is so banged up that it feels like every time the offense gets field position, it's the 30-yard line or less, and their own 30-yard line. Whereas before, they were able to get stops, they were able to, you know, turn the ball over more, but with all the injuries they've had, the defense hasn't flipped the field like they had earlier on in the year, which makes for a lot easier points for Josh Allen and the offense. So I think that's something that nobody's talking about either.
Josh Allen also had 10 carries for 78 yards and a touchdown, which obviously for fantasy purposes is great. And I said this to you before, but and I know I harp about the Bills running game a lot, Matt, but at the same time, like I can't help but think that Josh Allen is an absolute physical specimen. He is so much fun to watch, and he is he's the kind of guy who can lay balls on and the most accurate of passes, absolute frozen ropes, like I said. At the same time, I do kind of have concerns that if they keep on doing this, and I know a part of it is not just the Buffalo Bills themselves. I know that it is also Josh Allen wanting to do it himself. But I can't help but think of like Cam Newton being in his absolute prime, because we saw what Cam Newton was even just a couple of seasons ago. And Cam Newton was again, another physical specimen, could do some absolutely ludicrous things with the football, either when he was carrying it or throwing it. And the heights for him were so high, but then afterwards injuries took their toll. Are you worried about that at all with Allen, Josh Allen?
Well, it's funny that you mentioned that, because one of the things that came to mind was one of the last plays of the game where they ran Allen on the outside and
right.
He got absolutely drilled.
Yeah.
And my first thought was, why? It's already not a super long field goal. Obviously, you want to get back into field goal range. But, and this is no disrespect to Devin Singletary, but if Devin Singletary gets hurt, it's one thing. If Josh Allen gets hurt, that's an entirely different thing. So why not run Singletary and try and, you know, carve out a few more yards instead of running your quarterback who almost got hurt again? I get that as a runner, he's very dangerous. But in the same breath, you got to protect him and you got to figure out other ways late in the game to not have him be put in a position like that. So it's finding that balance. And I honestly think, Show, that we're going to be having that conversation for at least a couple more years with Josh Allen about, you know, if he's going to be able to stay healthy, if they keep running him like this. And it does scare the hell out of me. How about that? As a Bills fan, it absolutely does scare the hell out of me how they run him. And keeping him upright, I know the injury that he had was him throwing out of the pocket, but still, you put yourself in so much more danger when you're running plays like that near the end of the game.
Yeah, exactly. Like again, like is it great for our purposes in fantasy football? Yeah, 1,000%. He had 250 yards passing, two touchdowns. He had one pick that honestly, I'm not sure if it was his fault really. And then Josh Allen also had the 10 carries, 78 yards, and a TD, which is fantastic. But at the same time, I do wonder long term how sustainable it is. But hey, if you started him this weekend, you probably are off to a very, very good start after a 28-25 win for the Detroit Lions. I wanted to get to these other couple of games before we start talking about some of the stories of the day. The Cowboys pulling out the 28-20 win over the Giants. Really, the Giants scoring a TD, I think, in the final, minute or two to make it seem a lot closer than it was after a lackluster first half by the Cowboys. They really came alive in the second half. All I can say about the Cowboys offense is, even though I think Dak Prescott doesn't look super inspiring at times, and I think you have to give some credit to the Giants defense. They're a pretty stingy group, as they have been all season. But boy, Dalton Schultz, we'll get to CeeDee Lamb in a second here because he still had a great game. But Dalton Schultz, like, find you someone who looks at Dalton Schultz, who looks at you like Dak Prescott looks at Dalton Schultz in the red zone. Because like they scheme up very specific things for Dalton Schultz when they're inside that 20-yard line, inside the 10-yard line, inside the 5-yard line. Honestly, like more than I think maybe any other tight end in the entire NFL, and I'm including Travis Kelce. Like I almost feel like Patrick Mahomes and Travis Kelce can get away with some things because they're both just ludicrously talented. There's a lot of like scramble drill stuff that goes on down there. And by and large, even the scheme stuff works out for Travis Kelce. But boy, like if you have Dalton Schultz, And I know it's probably not sustainable to expect 2 touchdowns on 4 catches every week, Matt, but if you have Schultz and you don't have one of the other top guys like a Kelce, Kittle, Andrews, and I know Andrews has been banged up this season, if you don't have one of those three guys, you're probably feeling pretty good if you have Dalton Schultz.
Of course, and there was a reason why he finished as a top five tight end last year and why a lot of people had him in the same spot. Listen, if Dalton Schultz doesn't get hurt and Dak Prescott doesn't get hurt, we're talking about another top five. He's probably going to finish near the top five again this year. So he's just been such a good performer. And the funniest part about all of this is that he was kind of the He was like the consolation prize for Dallas Goedert, because Philadelphia jumped ahead of the Dallas Cowboys to select Dallas Goedert, because that's who they had lined up, and they ended up taking Dalton Schultz, and he's been just fine, thank you very much. He's a really good player. He's a good pass catcher. He caught all 4 of his targets for 31 yards, and of course, we mentioned, it's not sustainable for him to have 2 touchdowns every single week, but he's going to get his opportunities. There's no question that he's going to get his opportunities because they do look to him in the red zone. I really like Dalton Schultz. I tried to acquire him in a few places before trade deadlines and whatnot, and he's been excellent. Like, if you look at what the tight ends did, like Jake Ferguson had 3 catches for 57 yards, another up-and-coming tight end. Dalton Schultz had the 4 catches for 31 yards, 2 touchdowns, as we mentioned. Peyton Hendershot had 1 carry for 2 yards and had a touchdown. So the tight ends were all involved in different facets of the game, and they produced and showed, dare I say, have we seen the resurgence of Ezekiel Elliott? Am I willing to go there? If you see the Cowboys put up 28 points and Tony Pollard does not have a touchdown, I would have said that you were crazy.
Yeah, Ezekiel Elliott, over the last, I think, month of playing time, since becoming healthier, has looked like the old battering ram Ezekiel Elliott that we'd seen when he was drafted, right? Maybe the speed isn't there anymore, but at the same time, 16 carries for 92 yards. He had 1 catch for 3 yards, which I guess that's fine. But he had a touchdown as well on the ground. And yeah, Ezekiel Elliott, since becoming healthy, has lent a new dimension, I would think, to this Dallas Cowboys offense. Tony Pollard had a decent day as well. 18 carries for 60 yards, no TDs. He had 2 catches for 1 yard as well. And so neither of them super, you know, being large factors in the passing game on Thanksgiving. But Ezekiel Elliott with 92 yards and a TD is great to see, because I think it does probably, I'm not ready to anoint Zeke as a quote unquote league winner down the stretch, because he probably wasn't drafted very highly, but B, I mean, it's probably going to be a split / timeshare with both these guys for the rest of the season. But if they can get back to the whole thunder and lightning thing that we had seen to lesser degrees in seasons past, then boy, the Dallas Cowboys will have a lot of pressure taken off of not just Dak Prescott, but also CeeDee Lamb and Michael Gallup. Like, CeeDee Lamb had 6 catches for 106 yards, and Michael Gallup had 5 very impressive catches for 63 yards. Like, that guy was making contested grabs. I want to say every single one of those 5 grabs were contested grabs. Like, going up to get it, yanking passes out of defenders' hands. Like, Dak wasn't super accurate on a lot of those 5 catches for Michael Gallup, and he made the most of them. Again, 5 catches for 63 yards, definitely not anything to sneeze at. And CeeDee Lamb, I think he was just this close from having a couple of bigger days, because he was tackled like right within the 5-yard line, right at the 2-yard line, a handful of times. So had he gotten into the end zone even once on 6 catches and 106 yards, you're probably feeling even better about that. But if you have over 100 yards from CeeDee Lamb on Thanksgiving, I think you probably feel pretty good about it. But I dare say as well, one of the best fantasy assets, and just assets to hold in general between now and the end of the fantasy season, Matt, I honestly dare I say, might be the Dallas defense. Like, I know defenses, like, some leagues might not even have defenses, right? But I do think that defenses are can be very fantasy relevant. I mean, in years past, a couple of years ago, we had the Patriots defense that was like having like an RB2 and RB3, basically, it felt like every week. Kickers can be the same way, right? The Philly defense, another one that has, despite falling off this season, has looked, looking a little more mortal in the last couple of weeks, has still been very good. The Dallas defense is definitely one, I think, as we approach the fantasy playoffs, it's week 12, As we approach the rest of the fantasy season and some fantasy playoffs start in week 13, some start in week 14, I think most start in week 15. But as we approach that point in the next couple of weeks, the trade deadline as well, I think it is important to realize that you can pair defenses like Dallas defenses with other maybe ones that might be available on the waiver wire. Like, generally speaking, I do not advocate for holding two Ds, but at this point, you are probably better served doing it if you think you're going to make the playoffs.
Well, the next three games, they have the Colts, they have the Texans, and they have the Jaguars. Ooh. And last time I checked, the Colts, the Texans, and the Jaguars have had issues holding on to the ball. So I think that they're going to be fantasy relevant. The issue becomes, what are they like when the playoffs start? And so the Jaguars will at the beginning of the fantasy playoffs, if I'm not mistaken. And then they have the Eagles, and then they have the Titans to round out the fantasy playoffs. So you're going to have to make a decision. Like, I feel like the Cowboys defense is startable regardless, just because they've been so good. Like, they had the three sacks, they had a forced fumble in this game. And if it weren't for that late TD that really meant nothing, we'd be having a different conversation about, you know, the Cowboys allowing 13 points after allowing three to the Vikings. And they did kind of get torched a bit by the Packers and the Bears, but they're still able to get to the quarterback. I think they had something like 8 quarterback hits. So they're getting to where they need to get to, and their secondary's been able to turn the ball over at a pretty frequent basis. So I like Dallas's defense, and I would be okay starting them even in the playoffs with two tougher matchups.
Yeah, the Dallas defense has been very, very reliable, and I think a lot of people are probably at that point where even if you don't want to roster two defenses for the playoffs, it's perfectly valid as well, and you want to just roll with Dallas, you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. But let's get to the last Thanksgiving game before we start some of the stories I wanted to get to with you. And Patriots-Vikings, Patriots losing a very close one to the Vikings on the road, a 33-26 victory for Minnesota. I think the usual suspects were the stars in this one: Justin Jefferson, Adam Thielen, TJ Hockenson. Pretty much most of the only three pass catchers are going to start in any consistency, any level here. Justin Jefferson had 9 catches for 139 yards and a touchdown. He was basically doing whatever he wanted. Like, no matter, it didn't really matter who was covering him. If two guys were covering him, it didn't really matter. Kirk Cousins was getting the ball on time and with some pretty accurate passes from old Kirk, but some fantastic catches from Justin Jefferson. Adam Thielen with a late TD, 9 catches for 61 yards and a TD. So anytime you get a we talked about how Thielen is kind of TD dependent, and he definitely is, but 9 catches in this one as well, because Kirk Cousins threw the ball 37 times. TJ Hockenson, 5 catches for 43 yards and a TD. Again, TJ Hockenson, since joining the Minnesota Vikings, has been very, very consistent. Maybe a top 5 finish by the end of it all for Hockenson. But the three guys that you are usually going to start in most games, I think Thielen is I think one of those like every week flex plays with some upside for more. Well, this was the upside for more week here on Thanksgiving in America. And of course, Dalvin Cook, 22 carries for 42 scoreless yards. He had 4 receptions for 14 yards as well. So not so great a day for Dalvin Cook. And Kirk Cousins himself, 30 for 37, 299 yards and 3 touchdowns. I guess it's a pretty stark change, Matt, from what we saw in the previous week, in week 11, when they got absolutely destructified, let's say, by the Dallas Cowboys, losing what, like 40-3? The very next week, the Minnesota Vikings, now 9-2, they put up 33 points on a defense I think we all thought was pretty good, but this game turned into a shootout real quick.
It did, and I was kind of surprised that New England was able to keep up. Like, Mac Jones had 382 passing yards. He had to throw the ball 39 times. 2 touchdowns, like we're not getting that from Mac Jones every week. We're aware of that. But what ended up happening was, you mentioned the Dalvin Cook line. New England said, we're going to take away what we believe is your best option in Dalvin Cook, even though it's not. We know it's Justin Jefferson. But Justin Jefferson's, he's basically uncoverable. We figured that out. What they wanted to do was, hey, we're going to make Kirk Cousins throw the ball in primetime. And for once in his life, Kirk Cousins was actually good throwing the ball in primetime. He did throw an interception, which was the easiest money that you would have made if you were gambling on this game, was Kirk Cousins throwing an interception. But it was a way more high-scoring game than I thought. The Patriots are 6-5. They're still right in it. Kings improved to 9-2.
All right, Matt, you know what? I'm gonna cut you off really quick just because I think Skynet is coming for your connection wherever you are. But we'll get you. You know what? We'll get you on in a couple of minutes here because Matt, I believe, is coaching a tournament somewhere in the Great White North. Yeah, Sudbury. He's where he's coaching a tournament. So the stable connection of his toasty home is probably not with him as he usually is. I do want to get to the Patriots side of this because, like Matt was saying, that you can only do a certain amount of things with Justin Jefferson when you're covering him on defense. You can only do a certain amount of things with Dalvin Cook. And like Matt said, they definitely tried to take away Dalvin Cook, and they were pretty successful in that regard, I would say. For a game where the Vikings were up or were relatively, it was relatively close, even though the Vikings did lead for most of it, he still got a very decent amount of carries, like more than I would have thought in a game where Kirk Cousins threw the ball 37 times. Dalvin Cook still touched the ball overall, let's see, 26 times, 22 carries, four receptions. That's a tremendous amount of touches for someone who only ended up with like five fantasy points in the end, which is kind of impressive. We got Matt back here. Matt, before we take a very quick break, I just wanted to get to one thing on the Patriots, because I'm not sure you can necessarily count on Devontae Parker having four catches for 80 yards in any given week, or that you can count on like a Nelson Aguilar touchdown. But I do want to say Ramondre Stevenson, Damian Harris apparently left this game with a thigh injury. And when he left, we kind of just saw it ratchet up for Ramondre Stevenson even more. If you look at the rushing stats, 7 carries for 36 yards is not super inspiring. That's definitely for true. But at the same time, Ramondre Stevenson had 9 catches for 76 yards. 9 catches for 76 yards for any running back is elite. But I've joked with you a couple weeks in a row now, that Ramondre Stevenson is like he's a more of a pass catching back than we give him credit for, and that usually, and most weeks after Jacoby Myers, and Myers missed a chunk of this game with I think he had a shoulder injury and there was a concussion concern, so he missed some time, and it was in this time where Ramondre Stevenson made some hay. But after Myers, most weeks the next most reliable pass catcher is going to be Stevenson. It certainly looks like that's going to continue to be the case.
So Stevenson has at least 5 targets in 8 of 11 games, which is insane. And the last, if I'm counting right, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, he has no less than 5 targets. He had 10 this week. He had 6, 7, 7, 8, and 5. We're talking about an elite workload, which we never would have expected. I mean, he did only have, I say only, 16 touches this week because he had only the 7 carries. But the previous week, 21, 18, 23, 19, 23, 27. Like, he's getting an elite workload, and he is absolutely taking advantage of it. You know, I'm surprised, because when you think of a Patriots running back that is a good pass catcher, you don't think of somebody as big as Ramondre Stevenson. I think that's the biggest part. Everybody said, oh, you know, Ramondre's not going to be able to do it. He's not a good enough pass catcher. But what we've seen is, I guess when it comes to the running back, it doesn't matter how big or small you are. If you can catch the ball in Bill Belichick's system, you can catch the ball in Bill Belichick's system. And it's worked out really well for anybody that drafted him. He was one of those players that was talked about a lot at the beginning of the season as a potential league winner, because he was the better running back than Damian Harris. And it's not that Damian Harris has been bad, because his yards per carry has been pretty good. He's been pretty efficient when he's had the ball. The problem is that Ramondre Stevenson just does everything, and he does everything fairly well. Like, even in a game, you know, last week against the Jets, that miserable game, he only had 15 carries for 26 yards, 1.7 yards per carry, but he still managed 6 receptions for 56 yards. So he's doing it even in games where he's not efficient on the ground, and he's been a real boon for a lot of people who took him late, and they're really reaping the rewards of him being a league winner.
Yeah, I definitely thought when it came to the Patriots that we would see another usage, another split, kind of like they'd find, like, Damian Harris would be the guy to run the ball, maybe Ramondre Stevenson would be the guy to sometimes run the ball, and that they'd find another James White-ish player. It turns out they have the confidence in Ramondre Stevenson to do both roles, because Damian Harris, I don't know if he's droppable just yet until we find out the severity of the thigh injury, but if it is, like, if we're at the point where Damian Harris misses, like, 2 to 3 weeks, again, given that the fantasy playoffs are nearby, he actually might be droppable, which is crazy to say considering he had, what, 14 or 15 touchdowns on the ground last season. But Ramondre Stevenson, despite the loss, was still very productive for the Patriots in this Week 12 loss, 33-26. Minnesota beating New England to wrap up the American Thanksgiving slate. For us, we're going to take a very quick break. When we come back, in the next segment, we'll get to some of the top stories of this week. And also, your texts at 590-590, name and location. We're only here for one more segment because Canada and Croatia is going to kick off in a little while. But still, while we are here, we will answer as many text line questions on the People's Text Line as humanly possible. So your text straight ahead, top stories straight ahead on the Fantasy Show, Show and Matt on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to the Fantasy Show on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Show Atlee, Matt Marchese here for one more segment this Sunday morning ahead of Canada-Croatia, kicking the grass with Jeff Blair and Devang Desai. Will follow us just to bridge you to Canada-Croatia later on this morning. But still, in place of our usual 2 hours of start-sit talk, we're here to take your questions on the People's Text Line at 590-590. Name and location, please. You can tweet at us. SNS Alley with two L's at MattyMar89 at The Fantasy Show on Twitter. I will get to the text line questions to wrap up in about 10 minutes. We'll spend the last 10 minutes of the program doing texts. And of course, as usual, once this is done, if we don't get to your text line question on the air, we will still answer all of your text line questions before 1 p.m. Eastern, of course. But I wanted to get to some of the top stories here with you, Matt, in the next couple of minutes. Real quick, this is one you and I have been talking about a lot in terms of Zach Wilson. For Bears at Jets later today, Zach Wilson not playing very well over the last couple of weeks and then refusing to take some responsibility after the loss to the Patriots, and he was benched. He is no longer going to be the starting quarterback. It's possible he will be at some point this season because, again, I think the Jets just need, like, they just need a sliver of competent QB play, and they would probably make the playoffs with that defense, those wide receivers, even with Breece Hall on the IR. This is a very, very good team. But still, after the kind of debacle with the media last weekend, Mike White is going to start. I got to admit, I was surprised it was Mike White and not Joe Flacco, if only because we had seen Flacco earlier this season. And he actually looked pretty well, a very, very efficient. Oh, you know what? That's not true. Efficient is not the right word. But he looked better than what the Jets offense had looked this far in the rest of the season. I'm curious, though, Mike White now over Joe Flacco, what does that do to someone like Michael Carter? And can you risk starting Garrett Wilson?
Oh, boy. All right, we're starting off with the tough question right out of the hopper here, Show. You know, I was super surprised that Joe Flacco wasn't the starting quarterback. Now, I mean, maybe we shouldn't be because he wasn't even dressing on game days. He was inactive when Zach Wilson and they named Mike White the backup. But Joe Flacco, like, if they wanted to get to the playoffs, if that's what the goal was, then I feel like Joe Flacco was probably the better answer. But anyway, Michael Carter, I still think because of his pass-catching ability, is going to be able to be in a flex start position. I don't know. Garrett Wilson is just, he's looked good. Last week aside, because last week was such a weird game.
It was windy too, right?
Yeah, the wind was just horrible. Neither quarterback had a good game, and not really any receivers had decent days either. But I still think that Garrett Wilson is talented enough that if you get the ball within the vicinity, he's able to catch it. And he's able to make plays when he does get the ball in his hands. So, I mean, it's tempered expectations, but I still think that as a flex starter or a wide receiver three, I still do like Garrett Wilson.
Yeah, I think that's where I kind of have him ranked more as a flex. And I only say that because we had this conversation almost exactly when they went from Flacco to Zach Wilson when he came back from the injury that he had suffered in the preseason, right? Like, I basically said to you, like, okay, just temper your expectations for, let's say, Garrett Wilson, just because you know, the QB changes can be a little different for all parties involved, but specifically for wide receivers. And I think generally speaking, Garrett Wilson has looked, I almost think he's looked one of the best, if not the best, of the rookie wide receivers. And I know this, that includes guys like Chris Olave and so on. But I do think it's just the QB situation has held him back, because when he has been on, he has been fantastic. I do have him as a WR3 flex play, closer to being a flex play this weekend, only because I just want to see what Mike White is. He's like the dump off king. And if that is the case, I almost feel like it does power Michael Carter specifically a little more than even James Robinson, maybe even a little more than, well, certainly Elijah Moore. Corey Davis could return this week, so you got to monitor that, because I think that does impact the usage of Garrett Wilson to a certain degree. Like, it might make him have to be a little more efficient with the touches, which is certainly possible because, again, he's very, very good. But just, I would keep all of that in mind. Personally, I'm just going to stay away from starting any Jets if possible this weekend. But I mean, if you have to start Garrett Wilson or Michael Carter, those are probably the two main guys. On the other side of this matchup, Bears at Jets, Justin Fields, it looks, I don't think he has been officially ruled out, but it certainly looks pretty likely that with the separated shoulder, he will not play. Honestly, it seems like the best thing, because I think it would be like QB coaching malpractice to have Justin Fields be injured, clearly injured at the end of last week's game, and then go out there and actually start this week. It just seems like that's the complete wrong thing to do for someone's career. We've seen that happen with like RG3 and other very highly drafted QBs and not the not so distant past. So I think it's probably the right thing. It does mean that Trevor Siemian is the backup. So I guess Darnell Mooney is probably the only pass catcher you can like confidently start, but I don't know. It's the same kind of situation as we're talking about with the Jets. Just like temper expectations here, because I think you wanted to see like Zach Wilson, Justin Fields, and not Mike White and Trevor Siemian.
Yeah, it's the matchup we didn't know we needed, right? That's exactly what it is.
I'm not watching this game.
You couldn't pay me to watch this game. But the thing that is so disappointing is just we've seen Justin Fields just take his game to a completely different level. And whenever you never want anybody to get hurt, but when it happens to a star and a young star who's literally just figured it out over the last whatever it is, 6-7 games, that it's just a shame that he misses time because of an injury. And frankly, Show, it was an injury that had to do with coaching malpractice. If we're being honest, he looked like he banged up his shoulder, and let's run him again. It feels like the Herb Brooks in Miracle scene, where they line him up on the goal line. He goes, again. And so I know that Justin Fields has been basically the reason for Chicago's offensive resurgence. But it certainly downgrades Darnell Mooney. It certainly downgrades Cole Kmet. Like, I'm the only Bear that I'm starting is David Montgomery, because I think he's in for a massive workload, especially with Khalil Herbert out since he's been on the IR.
Yeah, and like you said, I think he already had a mass. He being David Montgomery had a massive share of the running back room, just generally speaking. And after Herbert went down, the other guy having that share was Fields himself. And if no Fields today, then yeah, I got to think that they're going to run the ball like 25 to 30 times with Montgomery alone. Now, the Jets defense is very good. It's very stout against the run. And that was the case even last year. But I think if you're getting a running back with that amount of carries on a weekly basis, that amount of volume, I think you can feel good about it, if not great, because I'm not sure how high value those touches will be, but Montgomery is talented enough that he'll probably make some hay with 25 touches, I would imagine. I wanted to get to a couple other things with you as well. Tampa Bay, Buccaneers at Browns, one of the early games today as well. Leonard Fournette is listed as doubtful. Again, I'm not sure if he's officially been ruled out just quite yet. That might come in the next couple of hours, but he's been listed as doubtful even going back to yesterday. So whenever that happens, I feel like that means you're probably not going to play, which essentially means that Rashad White becomes the guy. And against the Browns defense, which is honestly not great, you can feel pretty good about maybe slotting in Rashad White. I got him as maybe like a low-end RB2, Matt.
Oh, show. I am, you know me and Rashad White. Like, I'm a big Rashad White guy.
Yeah.
And I've got him as a high-end RB2 here.
Ooh, okay.
I have him as I think he's going to be able to catch passes out of the backfield. I think that I'm expecting like 22 touches from Rashad White against a horrible Cleveland Browns defense. I think he's going to light the world on fire today. And a player that we had talked about from the beginning of the season as, hey, you need to roster Rashad White. You have to have him and you have to stash him, because at the end of the day, the running back position in any Tom Brady offense has been fruitful, because even this season, show, and the offense hasn't been good, Leonard Fournette was still having a good fantasy season, even with them not being able to move the ball, even with Tom Brady not having the same amount of success. And so Rashad White, who has one of the best relative athletic scores since, I think, out of like 1,800 running backs that they've run the relative athletic score since the 80s, that Rashad White's is like fourth. So he's a special talent, he's a special athlete, and I do wonder if how long Leonard Fournette is out for one thing, because I do expect that he's going to be out, but I do wonder how much of the reins have been passed on to Rashad White already, regardless of that injury.
Well, you go back to that game in Germany from a couple weeks ago in Munich, and Fournette got banged up at the end of that game, and then they had their bye, the Buccaneers, but that game, it was interesting, right? Because at the end of that game, to close out the game against the Seahawks, Rashad White got the ball and he made the most of it. Like, he was the one who sealed that game, and he just looked immediately more. And this is not a knock against Leonard Fournette, but there's a lot of tread on those tires going back to his days in Jacksonville. And Rashad White, much fresher legs, still being worked into the game plan, clearly gaining at least a little bit of Tom Brady's trust. So I do like him as an RB2. The general offensive problems for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers is what has me listing him as a lower-end RB2 versus a higher-end RB2. But still, he should be in your starting lineup today against a god-awful Cleveland Browns defense. The last one I wanted to get to with you before we get to our text line questions. Cards are Chargers at Cardinals a little later on this afternoon. I believe Mike Williams is listed as out, and that, boy, after Mike Williams booming us, coming back and saying, oh, I'm 200% healthy. He, like, aggravates the high ankle sprain on, like, the third or fourth snap of the game. He gets less than, I want to say, 2 points. Probably lost a lot of people their weeks, which is unfortunate, but Keenan Allen is back, and it looks like he's going to remain back unless he also gets injured. But I got to say, I do think Joshua Palmer, I mean, I thought he'd still be relatively productive, but he had a career day, long catches, two TDs. He might legitimately be better as the number two option when Keenan Allen is on the field versus Palmer having to be the number one guy getting the number one coverage, if that makes sense.
So Josh Palmer over the course of the season is wide receiver 30 in half PPR formats. And that's also due to the fact that, you know, Mike Williams missed some time and Keenan Allen missed some time. But in that, so since week, like, I mean, if we're talking over the course of an entire season with Josh Palmer, no, you probably didn't draft him. You probably picked him up like after the Keenan Allen injury. You probably didn't start him all that often. And then he starts to take off, and that was basically free money with Josh Palmer. And he's been, like, last week was excellent. He's been as reliable a wide receiver as you can get over the last 4 or 5 weeks. And even with Keenan Allen there, like, I'm assuming we're going to see a little bit more from Keenan Allen this week, just because I'm sure, I don't know what the snap counts were, but I'm sure that they eased him back in a little bit because Mike Williams had started the game. But having said all that, Josh Palmer, even with Keenan Allen there, is absolutely startable. And we talk about, you know, attaching players to specific quarterbacks, and I know Justin Herbert hasn't had the same season as he had in previous years, but he's still a really good quarterback. They still like to sling the ball. I know they have Austin Eckler, but Josh Palmer, he's catching passes, and the key is he's scoring touchdowns here. And so I'm a big Mike Williams guy, but he just can't stay healthy enough to trust him, whereas Josh Palmer has fit right in, and he doesn't have the same body type as Mike Williams. Mike Williams is a bigger wide receiver, one of those more of a 50-50 guy, whereas Josh Palmer is a smaller, a little bit faster wide receiver who's really making plays, and it's funny because Josh Palmer was the guy who was a little bit of an afterthought. He was a third-round pick, but they had just signed Mike Williams to the big contract, and Keenan Allen has one as well. And here's Josh Palmer out playing and staying on the field more than both of them have.
Yeah, Canada's own Josh Palmer, I think, has been pretty pretty fantasy relevant. I like for to give you an example of who I'm starting him over. Like, I know Ja'Marr Chase may or may not return today. Some people saying he will, some people saying he won't. Let's just say he is out, and Tyler Boyd still contains and carries that value he has carried since Chase going out. I'm still starting, I think, Josh Palmer over. For me personally, maybe like Tyler Boyd, and we talked about Garrett Wilson earlier, Darnell Mooney. I'd probably start Josh Palmer this particular week over those three guys. But it's like it's relatively close, but that's kind of where I'm at right now. We have a couple more stories we can get to, but you know what? I want to get to as many text line questions as possible in these last 10 minutes here, Matt. So why are you ready to do some texts this Sunday morning? I'm going to take that as a yes. Let's do it.
And now, your fantasy questions on the People's Text Line.
You know what?
Sorry, Show. My connection went out. I had to reconnect. And this is what happens when you come to Sudbury and have to do the show out of your hotel room.
that's really funny. Wow. Matt's usually so gung-ho for the text. You really didn't want to do it this morning. Okay, let's do a couple texts here before we go. We got about 10 minutes. FaZe in Peterborough, full PPR league. Just wanted to say your help has been fantastic. I'm 10-1 in part because of it. Fantastic, FaZe. The question I have is at flex, Jeff Wilson Jr., A.J. Brown, or Michael Pittman Jr.? Just worried about the illness with Brown. If you hadn't heard this, what FaZe is referring to with A.J. Brown, apparently he was like, he had some kind of non-COVID illness. He was sick for a part of the week. I don't believe he carries any kind of injury designation today, so he is going to be fired up. I think he's still going to see a lot of Jair Alexander, but Jair Alexander has been much more mortal this season, I think, so you can probably still start him. Having said that, like I don't know about you, Matt. Again, full PPR league, Jeff Wilson Jr., A.J. Brown, Michael Pittman Jr., you could start all of those guys. Is it crazy to say you want to start Jeff Wilson Jr. over A.J. Brown? Is that wild?
Oh, man, it looks like Raheem Mostert's going to be... It looks like he's doubtful.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
So probably a likely inactive. And, you know, with the way that they used Jeff Wilson last week, which was, again, stunning. The week before. I don't even know what to make of that Miami backfield. And with today's matchup, I mean, the Texans have allowed... They're the worst team against the run. They're horrible. And the Eagles, I mean, they've been really good, but they're paying a Packers secondary who's been pretty decent. I think I'm leaning Jeff Wilson Jr. in this one.
Yeah, oh, man, I think I am too. I think only because Raheem Mostert is likely to not play. If he was going to play, maybe I would have been swayed. But at the same time, Raheem Mostert just in recent weeks had fallen by the wayside a little bit, like a teensy bit, right? He's been seeing less and less carries every single week. I think he got injured like on the last carry of the game last week, which is absolutely crazy. So I hope he gets better. But boy, for fantasy purposes, if you have Jeff Wilson Jr., and I am sure a lot of people picked up JWJ for free in that short time period after Jeff Wilson Jr. was traded to Miami and after Christian McCaffrey was traded to San Francisco as well, right? Like, I think those were the two scenarios that I think changed his value in a huge way. But boy, JWJ has been fantastic. So I think we might both go with JWJ. I'm going to send FaZe a quick text just to confirm, see who else he has there going on. But it's very close for me with Jeff Wilson Jr. because of the lack of Raheem Mostert. Stephen East York says, okay, I need a QB with my boy Fields hurt, Mariota or Heinicke. I also need another half PPR wide receiver. So let's do the QB first. Mariota, Marcus Mariota, or Taylor Heinicke?
Oh, man. I feel like, man, Taylor Heinicke's been pretty good, and Washington's defense has been a little bit better. I think I'm going to lean with Taylor Heinicke here. Crack open a Heinicke.
Crack open the Heinicke. I like it. He also needs one other wide receiver in half PPR, Darnell Mooney or Garrett Wilson. I they're both kind of like, if you're doing like tiers, they're both kind of in the same tier for me. I'm curious where you fall on this. Just because of the QB change, that kind of applies to both these guys. You know what? I might still stick with Garrett Wilson. How about you? I think I might still go with Garrett Wilson just because of talent, maybe.
Well, I go with Garrett Wilson because the Jets' secondary has been so good, and I think that Darnell Mooney's going to see a lot of Sauce Gardner. And I mean, it's really a coin flip, but I just go with the better matchup in the secondary in this case, and I'll take Garrett Wilson as well.
You know, it's a good point, actually. Sauce Gardner has been, like, this early in his career, probably like a top five cover corner in the league in 2022. Like, he's been absolutely fantastic to watch. So I've really enjoyed it. I see one here. There's no name on this one, but I do like this text because I think it does show the importance of not doing this on Thursday nights. He says, good morning, boys. I made a mistake. I had Jamal Williams in my flex and I left Joe Mixon in a running back spot. So now with Mixon out, I have to start a running back of either... Okay, he has to start a running back specifically because Jamal Williams was in the flex. He has to start a running back of either Dylan, Jerick McKinnon, or Gus Edwards in a half PPR. The positive thing here is I think Gus Edwards is going to play. And if he plays, I think he's been talented enough that you can start him, especially over those other two guys. But I think that's a good reminder of why on Thursday night, don't start guys in your flex spots.
100%. We gotta keep putting out PSAs for that.
Yeah.
Here's my only thing. I feel like yes, Gus Edwards is healthy. But Clyde Edwards-Helaire was just put on the injured reserve, which means that a lot of the pass catching opportunities are gonna go to Jerick McKinnon. Having said all that, the Ravens are playing the Jaguars, who are not very good. Again, they just haven't been very good, period. And the Chiefs are going up against the Rams, who, despite their season being kind of over, they're not very good. They're starting Bryce Perkins. Like, it's a disaster. I think this is a little bit tougher for me. Just because of it being half PPR, I might actually lean McKinnon because I think he ends up getting a little bit more work. That game might end up being a blowout when we see a lot of Jerick McKinnon and Isaiah Pacheco.
That's not a bad one, actually. I think you might have convinced me.
But it's a split for me.
Yeah,
it's a split for me. It's really close. It's really close.
It is close. And I got the feeling, too, that maybe Gus Edwards was close to returning last week, and they just didn't because they wanted to play it safe. And we just know the Ravens run the ball a whole hell of a lot, and that's kind of the reason I might lean Gus. But, again, we've seen that the Chiefs offense, they like them some Jerick McKinnon, so I think I'll probably still go Gus, but it's very slim, and I think you're probably right. The half PPR could lean it in favor of Jerick McKinnon. Also, Matthew Stafford might be done for the season, I'm seeing here on Twitter. So if that's the case, I think I'm not sure if Bryce Perkins is the answer at QB fantasy wise, but just keep in mind that maybe not a lot of Los Angeles Rams might be have carrying a lot more value the rest of the season. Let's wrap up on this one, Matt. Good morning, fellas. Ben from Thornhill, full PPR. Eliminate one of these three: Devonta Smith, Tyler Boyd, and Treylon Burks. So you're benching one of these guys: Devonta, Tyler Boyd, and Treylon Burks, Matt. Full PPR.
That's a tough one. I mean, Treylon Burks did have a really good week. What do you have? 7 catches for 111 yards against the Packers. Devontae Smith's been really good. Oh, I can't believe I'm going to say this because I like the guy. I'm going to bench Tyler Boyd.
You know, I think I might... I'm going to go benching Tyler Boyd as well, only because I've started him basically every week that Jamar Chase has been out, and it looks like there's a real possibility Jamar Chase, despite practicing a little bit this week, might not actually suit up in week 12 just out of safety, right? And we saw this kind of nonsense with Joe Mixon last year when he looked like he was healthy and will he start, then he is inactive on game day, right? So I'm not sure if we're going to see that again this week, but Tyler Boyd, like, he actually hasn't had as much value as maybe you thought he would have. But let me ask you this. Samaje Perine looks like he's going to be the main running back this week because no Joe Mixon. He's already been ruled out with a concussion. So does that, like, how much do you factor in no Mixon and Perine being the guy to take away maybe potential pass catches from pretty much any other Bengals pass catcher here?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Perine was really good last week. I know he had 3 touchdowns. I don't expect that again. But it's Tyler Boyd who's been uninspiring with the opened up opportunity, and that's why I still think that I'm leaning to take him out of that group. I think P. Ryan ends up being like a mid-range RB2.
Yeah, I think so. You think you're probably right. P. Ryan with the RB2 status, because we know Joe Burrow loves to throw the ball to his running backs. But yeah, I think for Ben from Thornhill, eliminating one of these three, Devonta Smith, Tyler Boyd, Treylon Burks, we're both going to bench Tyler Boyd, so you can start Devonta and Treylon this week, Ben. That does it for the text line questions, but again, we will answer all of your text line questions off the air right after the show is done in about 5 minutes, but we appreciate you being alongside us. Good luck to Canada against Croatia today. A Kick in the Grass is next. For Matt, for Austin, I'm Show. Thanks for listening to the Fantasy Show across the Sportsnet Radio Network.